This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
I'm Veronica Rickert. Next hour, Wisconsin Senators Baldwin and Johnson are the most polarized Wisconsin senators from any single state in the country. They vote against each other 75% of the time. We'll hear how that division plays out in Washington.
First, though, much of Wisconsin is being hit with snow today, with central Wisconsin under a wintry weather advisory for most of the day.
It seems as though the snow and cold weather isn't going to stop this winter. The Midwest and eastern U.S. have been hit several times, and this week, even southern cities from Georgia to Texas are digging out from a freak storm.
As the snow falls, road crews pile on more salt to keep ice off the roads. Many cities are trying to move away from using so much salt, but we still use a lot.
And here to talk about where all that salt goes is Smithsonian Magazine reporter Joseph Stromberg. Joseph, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on again, Veronica.
So how much salt is it that we use each year?
It's really an amazingly high amount of salt. And it's estimated that we use 22 million tons annually, which works out to about 137 pounds per person in the U.S. So another way of putting that is that if you put every human on the U.S. on a scale and all the salt on the other end of the scale, it would be pretty close to balancing.
Wow. Well, salt has been our go-to melting device for years now. Why do we use so much of it?
Well, it's pretty effective. It lowers the melting point of water, the freezing point of water. So if we put it down before a storm and after a storm, it breaks up the ice that forms. It lets us drive, go to work, go to school. So it's pretty important, and it's the easiest way we have of doing that right now.
So let's say you've got a snowstorm. Generally, I think what happens is that the plows come out, they clear the snow, and then they go through and salt. If the temperatures are high enough, what happens then? What happens to the salt?
So, it helps melt the ice. Afterwards, though, it gets run off. Surface water takes it past the margins of the roads into local bodies of water, into the groundwater. And specifically, the ions, the sodium chloride ions that make up salt, split. And the sodium doesn't do a ton of damage, but the chloride spreads pretty easily into different bodies of water, even into ground wells. Some people might even end up tasting it in their drinking water. And it has a pretty significant effect on humans, on the wildlife, and on the environment.
So let's look at the human risk right now. You said some people can taste it in the water.
Yeah.
What does that do to people?
Well, I mean, in terms of the overall effects of salt, road salt, this is probably the least problematic, but water utilities do report that they get a spike of complaints about salty-tasting water during the winter, and that's because of road salt. A recent USGS study found that about 2% of wells nationwide, so people who get their drinking water from a well, have levels of chloride that exceed the safe levels established by the EPA. And this isn't a huge health issue for most people, but if someone's on a very restricted low-sodium diet and they're taking in salt through their drinking water, that could be a problem.
So the salt that's on the roads, you're saying, gets into the drinking water. What does that mean about the quality of the water itself?
Well, it only gets into water that's coming from ground wells, so not surface reservoirs and not treated water like that. But people who live in more rural areas and are getting their drinking water from their own wells, because it's in the groundwater, that's how they would end up getting it.
So you said the effect on humans is probably the least of our worries about salt. What happens to the salt when it goes into the natural environment around?
Yeah, that's more of a problem because obviously a lot of wildlife, a lot of types of animals live in that water directly. And so different streams and bodies of water will end up taking in levels of chloride that are problematic for different forms of life. Scientists have found that organisms like salamanders and frogs and small crustaceans, because they actually take in water through their skin, the levels of salt in the water are going to interfere with the uptake of water into their bodies. And so essentially what's happening is they're getting dried out, and survival rates for those kinds of animals living in artificially elevated environments with too much salt are lower. An overall survey found that about 40% of urban streams in America, so that's streams in areas developed by humans, streams that have more road salt getting into them, about 40% of those have excessive levels of chloride that could be a problem for wildlife.
Have we already seen declining numbers in frogs and salamanders and animals like that who might already be affected?
It's really hard to say. These are also areas where human development is happening in general and where paving over different natural environments. We're building roads. We're building houses. So we haven't been able to go and look at this point and say, oh, this many frogs or salamanders died because of road salt. But in controlled experiments, they do see that frogs and salamanders exposed to higher levels of salt in the water because of road salt tend to have lower survival rates.
What about things like fish and aquatic plants? Are they affected?
Yeah, they're affected, definitely. Plants, not just aquatic plants, but you might even see plants, you know, by the side of a road that's heavily salted are turning brown by the end of the winter. That's because all the salt, just like for the animals, makes it harder for them to take in water. And so they're pretty much getting dried out. And so that's most obvious when you have plants right by the side of the road, but it can happen anywhere where you have water getting runoff from the road, carrying salt into any kind of natural environment.
So you talked earlier about just how much salt we use every year, and it's a pretty big amount of salt. Are we overusing it? Do we need to use as much salt as we use?
I think it's really hard to say if we're overusing it. In recent years, there have been a lot of different strategies to actually cut down on the amount of salt we use, such as salting before a storm, which prevents some of the ice from forming, and also mixing in sand and gravel, as most municipalities now do. So you have salt only a percentage of the mix you're putting down, and the sand and gravel also just help tires get traction on the road. So I think, you know, maintenance crews are doing their best to get the roads clear without overusing salt. No one would be happy if they stopped using it entirely and we couldn't, you know, use our cars in the day after a storm or anything like that. So it's hard to say that they're overusing it, but it's important to point out some of the problems involved.
So you're saying it's more effective to salt beforehand? Is it? But would you not then, would you have to use more salt because you're salting twice before and after?
Yeah, so you would do it both, but overall the amount they found is lower. Because instead of just trying to, if you imagine a thick sheet of ice forming during a storm, if you're just putting salt on top afterwards, it has to eat all the way down through it. Versus if you're preparing the road with salt and gravel beforehand, the ice won't form as thick. So overall, it still cuts down on the amount, even though you're doing it twice.
Where does all the salt come from?
It's an interesting question. It's mostly coming from underground mines. Some of these are in the U.S., but a lot are internationally imported, sometimes from as far as Chile, which is one of the world's biggest salt producers. So it's really an international commodity chain and brought in huge quantities to the U.S.
As far as big problems that environmentalists are tracking, just how big is the problem of salt in the ecosystem?
I think reasonably it's smaller than a lot of other problems. You know, when you look at the recent news about water contamination in West Virginia or global climate change, these huge scale problems that impact humans as well as wildlife and the environment, those are definitely more problematic. But at the same time, salt does have effects on the natural ecosystem. And it's just kind of a further impact of growing development in the U.S. You know, the more development we build, the more roads and houses, the more area we're subjecting to this salt.
Now, you mentioned earlier the effects that salt can have on animals like frogs and salamanders. And in recent years, we've been hearing a lot about deformed frogs, frogs that have been born without legs and that kind of thing. Does salt have anything to do with that, or is it a completely different problem?
I don't know that for sure, but I would guess that it's a completely different problem. Salt is, and especially chloride, is something that's already out there in the environment at lower levels, and so it wouldn't really be likely to cause mutations or anything like that. It's simply that we're elevating the levels and making it harder for animals to regulate how much water they're taking in.
Now, there are lots of different alternatives to salt that are starting to be floated here in Wisconsin. We've started using cheese brine. Can you talk about that and some of the other alternatives that are out there?
Yeah, well, elsewhere, I've read about beet juice and sugarcane molasses getting mixed in with the salt. And obviously in Wisconsin, cheese brine is a newsworthy addition to the salt mix. In both Polk County and Milwaukee, maintenance crews have started mixing it in, and they've found that it speeds melting as compared to pure salt. They think partly because the fact that there's some moisture in there helps the salt stick to the road instead of just bouncing off it when they drop it. And by their measures, they're using 30 to 40% less salt when they mix in the cheese brine.
Wow. That's interesting. The problem is that it stinks.
Yeah, that's what I haven't visited Wisconsin since they've started using this. I've heard that. But, you know, yeah, I guess that's a problem that people might have to deal with.
That's interesting. So you said beet juice and molasses are something else that the people are working. If we start turning to those, does that create any other problems that we haven't foreseen yet?
I think at this point those are both kind of like cheese brine, just used in small trials in certain areas, and they're kind of just testing out to see how it works. I haven't been made aware of any large problems with that, either of those, but it's important to note that both of those, like cheese brine, would just be ways of reducing the salt that's getting used, not eliminating it.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We'll be watching it as we drive over those salty roads here in Wisconsin.
Thanks a lot for having me on. Get home safe.
All right, that was Joseph Stromberg, reporter at the Smithsonian Magazine.